Yo, what's up, everybody? It's good to see you guys. How are we doing? So far, so good. All right, fine. Yeah, thanks, guys. Turn to the person next to you, say, hi, my name is. Maybe someone behind you you've never met before. Maybe someone in front of you. If you're, look for someone very uncomfortable and introduce yourself to them. If you're single, this is your time, man. This is your time. Shoot your shot. You know what I mean? Well, what's up, everybody? If we've never met before, my name is Josiah. I'm the young adults pastor here at the church. So if you are between the ages of 18 to 29-ish and we have never met before, first of all, I have no idea how you're getting away with this. Like, I would just absolutely love to meet you after the service. But I oversee all the young adult ministry stuff that we got going on. But one of the main things that we got going on is on Thursday nights. And I would absolutely love to have you there every Thursday night at 7 o'clock. So make sure to introduce yourself so we can say something about it. For the past few months, we have been in a series on the book of James in the Bible, the letter of James. And what James is going to be bringing up, so James is writing about after Jesus is resurrected from the dead, he's writing in the Bible to a bunch of Christians being like, all right, how do we actually like play this out? How do we actually live this out? And what James is going to bring up today in chapter 4 is probably the number one complaint against Christians in America. So I think everybody's going to connect with this a lot. What he brings up is probably the number one accusation against Christians in America, and that is judgmentalism. Judgmentalism. I was doing some research, just like as a culture, where are we at right now? And I found some interesting things. So in 2007, there was a researcher named David Kinneman. He did a study, and he found that 87% of 16 to 29-year-olds believe that Christians are judgmental. 87% of 16 to 29-year-olds believe Christians are judgmental. Now, that was about a generation ago, but the Barna Group recently did a new survey in 2022, and what they asked was very interesting. They asked people who were not Christians, who are outside of following Jesus, they asked them, what is the number one reason that you doubt Jesus and his teachings? What is the number one reason? And what the results were absolutely fascinating, because the number one reason actually had nothing to do with Jesus himself. It actually had nothing to do with the Bible. It had nothing to do with science or evolution. It had nothing to do with like why pain and suffering. Why does God allow bad things to happen? The number one reason a non-Christian doubted Christ was because of, quote, the hypocrisy of religious people. The hypocrisy of religious people. Now, if you're in this room today, what I love about our church is our church is full of people that don't believe in God. And you're just here with a friend and you're just exploring. That's my favorite part about our church. And so if you're here and you wouldn't consider yourself a Christian, but this has been your experience, it's been an experience with Christians of judgment, of hypocrisy, whatever, I think you're gonna find today absolutely fascinating, because this is a topic that Jesus himself addresses very directly. And then the other authors of the Bible, including the book of James, address very, very directly. And here, we're gonna look at two passages of the Bible, but here's what they're both going to say. I'm gonna say this really up front, and then we're gonna use our time to break it down. They're both gonna say, listen, if I am a Christian and I am judgmental of other people, I only have two options. Either my relationship with Jesus is fundamentally unhealthy. Something is not clicking, something is misfiring, or I don't actually have a relationship with Jesus. My relationship with Jesus isn't real. The idea of being a judgmental Christian is an oxymoron. That is a completely contradictory statement. And actually, one of the number one signs the Bible gives that I have deceived myself into believing I have a relationship with God when I don't actually is that I'm judgmental of other people. It's how I view other people. And I only know that because for years of my life, that was my story. And God really had to get a hold of me of this. So I want to start by looking at Jesus's teachings first, because James expands on Jesus's teachings. So here's what Jesus says, and this is probably maybe Jesus's most quoted passage in America. Like, this is the one I hear the most often. Jesus says, he starts by saying this, listen, do not judge others and you will not be judged. Do not judge others and you will not be judged. Now, before we go any further, I think it would be helpful to define what Jesus means by the word judgment. Because I don't know about you, here's how, when I'm feeling a little sensitive, here's how I like to define the word judgment on a bad day for me. Someone is being judgmental anytime they say something I don't want to hear. That's how I tend to define it. Anytime, like if I'm doing something and you point that thing out to me, maybe with good intentions and to help me, I'm like, stop being judgmental. I also, on a bad day, can be anyone that looks at me funny is being judgmental. And now, to be fair, sometimes when people are looking at you, they are being judgmental. Sometimes when people do say those things, they are being judgmental. But that's not quite the definition of the word, especially the one that Jesus is using. Let me tell you first what judgment does not mean in the Bible. Let me clarify this. Judging someone does not mean to evaluate someone's actions. To judge someone actually does not mean to evaluate someone's actions. We are told in the Bible that we actually should evaluate actions, people's actions. We should determine something as helpful or harmful. Like if I my friend JJ's right here, if I just punch JJ in the face, like as hard as I could, first of all, he's gonna punch me back. And if you see JJ, he's been hitting the gym lately, I'll probably die on the spot. You know, I'm not the strongest specimen, but let's say I just jacked JJ as hard as I could. You should look at my action and determine that as evil. You should say that is a harmful thing to do. But here's where judgmentalism kicks in. It takes it one step further. Judgmentalism is when I shift from evaluating someone's action to actually evaluating the person themselves. I use someone's action as ammo to create a category for this person, and I throw that person in that category. So actually, the word judgment, The New Testament is written in the Bible, is written in the Greek language. And the original Greek word that Jesus is using and that James is using for judge is this word. And here's how it actually is defined. It actually means to separate, to put asunder, which means to like divide, to pick out, to select. So be selective and to choose. So here's what Jesus is saying. To judge someone means to draw a line between yourself and someone else. To look at someone and say, this person is categorically different than I am. Yeah, I messed up. Yeah, everybody makes mistakes. Everybody has those days. But this person is the worst. Like, they're worse off than I am. So the moment you say, oh my gosh, do you know what she did? I would never do something like that. You don't say that out loud, but that's definitely what you're thinking, and that's definitely why you brought up her mistake to begin with, to let everybody else know that you would never do something like that, right? The moment you do that, that's judgmental. When you find out, all of us have different things we do this with, but when you find out, oh man, that person slept with someone, or oh man, that couple is getting a divorce, or oh man, their kids aren't turning out, you know, the same way mine are. Or oh man, that person doesn't believe the same things I believe. All of a sudden, what you do is you're like, they must be in a different category than me. They must be they're categorically different than I am. Now, here's why that's super dangerous. Here's why Jesus says that mentality, whether that's just in your mind or spoken out loud, here's why that's super dangerous. Let's finish Jesus' teaching. Do not judge others and you will not be judged. For you will be treated as you treat other people. And then here's the wild line. Everybody lock in on this line. This is crazy. Jesus' quote, the standard you use in judging other people is the standard by which you will be judged. Do you understand what Jesus is saying? He's saying, listen, the standard that you use to evaluate other people is the same standard that you are asking God to evaluate you. Whatever metric you're applying to other people, you are looking at God and saying, God, you apply that metric right back at me. So about 2 years ago, I was teaching for one of our young adult retreats, one of our collective retreats. And there was hundreds of young adults there. And these retreats, man, I just don't sleep like the whole time we're there. I have to do like teaching after teaching after teaching. It feels like that's all I'm doing. And I'm just like, you know, chugging monsters to like try and make I'm absolutely exhausted. And I remember we were on the third day of this retreat. It was the last session. And during the last session, man, I was exhausted. And I was just pouring my heart out. Like I was just like, man, this is the last time I get with these guys. I'm just gonna tell them everything. And I was trying to be as sincere as I could. And I was just absolutely pouring my heart out, giving the absolute last energy that I had to the people that were there. Well, apparently, as I was teaching, somebody texted in a complaint to Collective specifically about me. And it was a really nasty complaint. It said, get Josiah off the stage right now. He's taken forever. I'm just exhausted. I want to go home. We get it. God loves us. Whoop-de-doo. You know, like just get him off the stage. I just want to go home. It was like that. It was like very specific like that. Now, Collective, our ministry, we have two phone numbers. The first phone number is an anonymous phone number that you can text in for like prayer requests and things. The second phone number goes directly to my phone with your contact name attached to it. He thought he picked the first one, definitely picked the second one. So as soon as I get down off stage, I open that contact. Now here's the deal. Every time we do these events, we always get complaints like that. Like I'm always expecting that, especially people that don't vibe with church stuff or like, you know, don't like God or whatever. Like we always get texts like that. When I saw his contact, it was one of the leaders of the retreats. Yeah, it was a guy that he totally thought he was like being anonymous, but he was like supposed to be on the team and he thought he could just rip me a new one and get away with it. So as soon as I saw his name, I just thought, you hypocrites, you fake, you liar. I thought you were a loving follower of Jesus that was here to help us. I guess you're on a different team now. You hypocrite. And so, you know, I like when you're tired and you're insecure and someone insults you, that insult just like wraps around in your head, you know, all the time. Was I taken for, you know, all that. So for the whole rest of the day, I was just thinking about this, and I was like, it's fine. It doesn't matter. He's a hypocrite. It doesn't matter what he says. Well, God has a sense of humor because about 2 days later, my wife was like, we should just go to a movie. Like, you know, you got a lot in your mind. We should go to a movie. So we go to the movie, and you know how you like reserve your seats or whatever. So we buy these tickets online. We sit down in the movie theater. Two seats away from me is this guy, and no one else is in the theater. It is me and this guy, two seats away from me. And he walked in. I was like, oh, that hypocrite. He just walked in. And the movie started playing. I was like, this movie a little too long for you, buddy. This movie a little boring. You want to email the director? Let him know how you feel about this. Now I will say, anytime I go to a movie, I always check the rating because I don't want to watch any movie with explicit sex or like nudity or anything like that. So I always check the rating. For whatever reason, I did not check the rating on this one. I thought it was PG-13 and it was definitely R. And so we're like watching the movie and a scene comes on. I'm like, Florence Pugh, you know, like I, you know, hide my face. And so this real nasty scene comes on and I'm hiding my head. I don't want to look at it. And then I'm thinking to myself, how is this guy in this theater right now? I bet he likes it. I'm sitting in the same theater. This guy, that hypocrite. And then I thought, I'm gonna see if he's watching this scene right now. I bet he's watching the scene right now. So I look over at him. Meanwhile, the guy behind me is like, why is that guy looking at that guy during the sex scene of this movie? That was the moment? Like, he wasn't watching, he was hiding his head too. But what did I do? What did I do? Everybody track this. I reduced this guy down to a comment. I reduced this guy down to a text. Every time I saw him, all I could think of was, you hypocrite. Now listen, Jesus is saying something really interesting. Jesus is saying, Josiah, you are correct. That is a nasty thing to do. I mean, that is a harmful, sinful thing to do. But Josiah, be careful. Because what if God evaluated you based on the stupidest thing that you've ever said when you were tired? Because let me tell you, there was not a single thing that he wrote that I have not said myself. And here's what happened, if I'm being honest. Over the next 2 years, God really started to use this guy to impact people in a really incredible way. I couldn't see it. Any impact that he had, I just thought, well, whatever, you hypocrite, because I reduced him down to his mistakes. So let me ask you a question. What if the standard that you use to evaluate other people was applied right back at you? What if the standard that you use to assess other people was how God evaluated you? Now, the letter of James is like a DLC expansion pack on Jesus's teachings. Like he's constantly like elaborating on the things that Jesus has set up and giving us even more illustration on what it's about. So James chapter 4, this is where we're at. And here's where James picks up. He definitely has Jesus's judgment teaching in mind. And here's what he says. He says, listen guys, don't speak evil against each other, dear brothers and sisters. Don't speak evil against each other, dear brothers and sisters. If you criticize, he lumps that in with speaking evil. If you criticize and judge each other, then you are criticizing and judging God's law. When James says God's law here, when James says God's law, he's actually not referring to like the Ten Commandments or like the law of Moses, if you're familiar with that. James says a couple chapters earlier that in the book of James, when he says the law, he is referring to the law of love, the law of forgiveness, what Jesus has done. So here's what he's saying. James is saying, guys, if you criticize and judge each other, you are criticizing and judging God's forgiveness. You are criticizing and judging God's love, which means you are criticizing God. And then he continues, your job is to obey the law of forgiveness, to hand forgiveness out. It's not to judge whether that forgiveness applies to you or not. It's not your job to determine who gets forgiveness and who doesn't. Verse 12, God alone who gave the law is the judge. He alone has the power to save or to destroy. So what right do you have to judge your neighbor? Here's what James is saying. At the end of the day, you only have two options. At the end of the day, all of us, we only have two options. Either you can see people through the lens of what they deserve. That's judgment. And you're probably right. Either you can see people through the lens of what they deserve, or you can see them through the lens of God's forgiveness, God's grace, God's compassion. But listen to me. Here's what you cannot do. What you cannot do is see everybody else through the lens of what they deserve, but then expect forgiveness for yourself. You can't see everybody else through the lens of judgment, but then expect compassion for yourself. So let me give you an example. When one of your family members absolutely like snaps and loses it, and they start saying all this crazy stuff. They start insulting you. They start kind of ripping the family apart. They do this maybe directly, or maybe they do this passive aggressively, you know, like that weird like group chat lingo that you can kind of get everybody rattled. You know what I mean? When a family member snaps and starts saying all this hurtful stuff, how do you typically respond? How do I typically respond? Well, something like this. Oh my gosh, I can't believe she's saying that. She needs to control her tongue. He is ripping this family apart. I don't even know if I want him around. Like he is dividing us. But when you're at your wit's end and you snap and you start saying what's really on your mind, what do you tell yourself? Well, they don't understand what I'm going through. They don't understand all the different factors that are going on in my, if they understood what I was going through, they would. All right, we're not connecting with this example. All right, fine. Let me give another one. Let's say you're driving. And someone cuts you off in traffic. That idiot, that's the worst driver I've ever seen in my entire life. Whatever bumper stickers they have, I now disagree with. That is the worst person I have ever met. But when you cut someone off, you're just in a hurry. Oh, they don't understand how important your meeting is or your appointment is. What God is saying, listen, you cannot have it both ways. That is hypocritical. Either you want a world where forgiveness is extended or you don't. But there is not a world where you get forgiveness and everyone else does not. Now put that standard, hit that next slide for me again, put that standard. So back to the standard I use, the metric I use to evaluate other people, that's the standard I'm asking God to evaluate me. Here's the pushback you're probably thinking, and I totally understand this. Here's the pushback. You could look at this and be like, all right, Josiah, I get it. Like, I need to be more patient with people. I need to be nicer to people. I need to be kinder to people. Like, you're totally right. You know, I need to give people the benefit of the doubt. But here's my objection. Here's my objection. Some people are worse than me, right? Some people are categorically different than I am. I would never do what they did. And so go ahead, God, if you use the standard I'm using on them, I'm gonna pass, I'm gonna be fine. And all of us have different standards depending on what you value, but you might look and say, man, I really would never sleep around like that. I really wouldn't do it. I really would never get drunk, you know, the way they do. I think a lot of us, we're pretty compassionate up to a certain point, but then there's some kind of threshold where you're like, I feel like terrorists are like in a different category. I feel, you know, there was that OnlyFans model that like slept with 1,000 guys in 24 hours. I feel like Bonnie Blue is like, you know, over here. I feel like everyone on the Epstein list, allegedly. I feel like all of them are in a different category than I am. And then all of us, would have a personal experience where someone did something to you that deeply hurt, and you're honestly looking and saying, I would never do that. My dad, he abandoned me. I would never abandon my own kids. Your ex, like I would never do what my friend, I would never treat people the way they treat people. And this teaching gets really difficult really fast because you're like, go ahead, God. Like whatever standard I'm using, use it. I'm gonna pass with flying colors. Now everybody listen to me. Here's what Jesus is not saying in this passage. This is very important, okay? Is everybody locked in? Here's what Jesus is not saying in this passage. Jesus is not saying what this person did is no big deal. Jesus is not making any excuses for evil behavior. And Jesus is not saying you're not allowed to call this evil. We should be able to say, like, that was an evil thing to do. Absolutely. So what the pain that you feel is completely valid and completely real. Anytime a hurting person, anytime we're wounded and we come before Jesus, over and over, the example in the Bible is that Jesus' reaction is compassion and tears, and he wants to heal the wounds that this person caused. But we all need to understand something really important. Ready? Jesus's standard is not at the action level, it's at the heart level. Jesus says this over and over again. Jesus's standard is not at the action level, it's at the heart level. So literally, in the same teaching that Jesus says, don't judge other people, if you go like just a handful of paragraphs before, Jesus kind of sets up that teaching by saying this. He says something very controversial and very like hard to understand. He says, listen, you guys need to understand something. The person who fantasizes about someone sexually, the person who just lets sexual fantasies play in their head, that person is the same as the person who actually has an affair. You're like, what? And then he goes even further. He goes, listen, you have to understand, the person who hates someone in their heart, and then he goes, even if you just call someone an idiot, have you ever called someone an idiot? That's just a me problem? Okay, fine. But even if you just call someone stupid, you call them an idiot, that person is the same as someone who commits physical murder. And you look at that and you're like, Jesus, what reality are you living in? Like, how could you possibly say how can the tiny thing that I did internally that didn't affect anyone be equivalent to that massive, even illegal thing that person did that affected tons of people? And here's what Jesus says, here's why. Because those two people actually have the same heart. Those two people actually have the same desires. Listen. Both the man who cheated on his wife at the Coldplay concert and the person who looks at pornography or watches White Lotus for the plot, these people are all the same. Why? Because both of those people want to have sex with someone they're not married to. Both of those people do. Listen, both the person who actually killed someone, actually murdered someone, and me who I just don't talk to my sister anymore. We're the same. I do talk to my sister, she's wonderful. But we're the same. Why? Here's why. Because both of you wish that person didn't exist. Both of you have figured out a method of removing that person from your life. Listen. So if I was in their circumstance with their biological makeup and with their type consequences in their reality, with their upbringing, listen, if I was in their circumstances, I should not be so confident that the heart I have right now wouldn't turn me into someone very, very different, and neither should you. Why? Because the same seeds of sin that are in their heart are in my heart as well. So how does God look at people fairly? Because anyone who was raised with two Nazi parents is immediately at a disadvantage. So how does God evaluate people fairly? Well, he looks at the heart level, not the action level. So let's play this out. Listen, you can't just draw the line at sexual abuse. You can't just draw the line at sexual abuse. You have to draw the line, the standard, at the heart posture that would lead someone to sexual abuse. Okay, what is the heart posture? Well, is the heart posture of sexual abuse not someone who exploits the vulnerabilities of other people in moments of weakness for their own pleasure and satisfaction. Is that not the heart posture? So what's the real line we're drawing? The real line we're drawing is someone who uses other people's weaknesses for their own pleasure. They capitalize on other people's pain for their own pleasure. Okay, wait a second. Isn't that what gossip is too? Is gossip not finding a vulnerable person in a moment of weakness, capitalizing on their pain so that I can laugh about it, or I can get a kick talking to my friends about it, or so I can just share it with others? Is that not what that is as well? Now listen, I am not saying these two things have the same consequences. Murder and hate don't have the same consequence. I'm not saying that. I am definitely saying these two things come from the same place. Are you sure that's the line you want to draw? Some of us, maybe you work with someone, and the person you work with is just doing a really poor job at their job. They're just doing a bad job. You know, maybe they were given an assignment and they dropped the ball and now everybody else has to pick up the pieces. Maybe they show up late or they just have a poor work ethic. And so when you look at this person, you know, it's just hard not to think, man, that person is lazy. Man, that person is lazy. And Jesus is saying, listen, you're probably right, but are you sure that that's the line you wanna draw? Are you sure that that's the line you wanna draw? Because in your attempt to be excellent at your job, you haven't really been with your family. And they're picking up the pieces of that. In your attempt to be excellent at your job, God's relationship with you is kind of falling through because you're not investing. In your attempt to be excellent at your job, other areas of your life are not so excellent. So what if God evaluated you by the weakest area of your life? Are you sure that that's the line you want to draw? Some of us in this room, you're like, you know who I can't stand? Judgmental people. Man, those hypocritical Christians, people at Grace Church, you know, judgmental people. Whoa, whoa, whoa. I feel like I shouldn't have to explain this one. If you are judgmental of judgmental people, now everybody listen to me. If you would call yourself a follower of Jesus, if you call yourself a Christian, I want you to really, really, really dial into what James says next right here. Because what he says next is very specifically addressed to you and addressed to me. James says, chapter 4, verse 11, he says, don't speak evil against each other, dear brothers and sisters. If you criticize and judge each other, then you are criticizing and judging God's law. But your job is to obey the law, not to judge whether it applies to you or not. So James is very specifically, catch this, see those each others? He's very specifically talking about Christians who criticize other Christians, which is an easy habit to get into, whether on the church or I saw this thing on social media, you know, like it's a very easy habit to get into. Have you ever said to yourself, maybe in your mind, or have you ever actually said out loud to another person, man, I don't think that person's a real Christian. You know, they claim this, but their actions say otherwise. I don't know if this person, Kanye West, you know, like I don't know if this person is a real Christian. James says, whoa, 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 be so careful with that. You have to be so careful with that. That person can't be a legit Christian. That person can't be a real Christian. Why? Well, they swear. I mean, they got a real potty mouth. I mean, like that person swears. They don't talk like a Christian would talk. Now listen to me. In the Bible, swearing is clear as day off the table. I know some of you have done some amazing gymnastics around that to figure that out. And it's like, bro, grow up, you're like 45. But anyways, but very clearly in the Bible, that is off the table. However, the Bible talks way more about gossip, division, and criticizing other people. So by the mere fact that you are talking to other people about someone else's swearing, God is probably more offended by your conversation than their F-bombs. Be careful. You gotta be really careful with that. That person can't be a real Christian. Why? Well, they smoke weed. Dun, dun, dun. You know, they smoke weed. Or you know, some of us, here's how you think, well, that person, you know, they're still living an LGBT lifestyle. I thought they accepted Christ. I thought they were supposed to leave that. Or man, that person, they slept with that person. They slept with their boyfriend. Or man, they won't move out of the apartment or whatever it is. Now, listen. In the Bible, all those things are clear as day. I'm not working my way around. I'm not doing anything like that. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about you. I'm talking about me. What if God evaluated you by the sin in your life that took the longest for you to walk away from? When I first started following Jesus, I didn't even take an attempt at my arrogance until multiple years in. The Bible talks way more about pride than any of the things I just listed off. When I first started following Jesus, Jesus made it abundantly clear to me that I needed to end the relationship that I was in. I just fought it and argued it and worked my way around and blah, 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 blah. What if God evaluated me by that? I'm sure if you're a follower of Jesus, you have a version of that. You have that thing that lingered and continues to linger. Otherwise, you believe that you became perfect the moment you accepted Christ. Then we're back to the ego thing. So, you know, whatever, you can deal with that. Listen, their lagging sin is public. Their lagging sin is obvious. Your lagging sin is private. But are you sure you want to draw that line? Are you sure that's the line you want to draw? James says, my job is to obey the law of forgiveness. My job is to hand out forgiveness left and right without even thinking about it. It is not ever my job to determine who qualifies for God's forgiveness and who does not. And Jesus makes a very strong statement, And this is what he's getting at. If there is any person in the world that I will look at with judgment, whether this is a person in my life, whether this is a person that I've never met before, but I read an article one time and now all these people, and I know what that kind of person's like. If there is any person in the world that I would say, this person is a different type of sinner than I am, they're in a different category than I am, I only have two options. One, either my relationship with God isn't clicking. Something is, you know, something's not standing on business. You know, something is not firing correctly. Or I actually don't have a relationship with God. Something in my relationship with God is not actually there. Now, I don't know about you. But this teaching from Jesus feels harsh to me at times. It feels a little extreme. It actually, sometimes it sounds like Jesus is the one that's being judgmental and condemning. It feels like Jesus being like, judging people, that's my biggest pet peeve. If you do that, no forgiveness for you. Straight to hell you go. You know what I mean? Like, it can come across that way. And so you can read this and be like, Jesus, why are you being so insensitive? Jesus, why are you being so unrealistic? Don't you realize how these people have hurt me, how they have hurt others? Now listen, everybody. Everybody listen. Jesus is not being judgmental. He is definitely not saying this angrily or with a wagging finger or anything like that. Jesus is not being harsh. He's not being judgmental. But Jesus is being honest. And Jesus is trying to get you and me to be honest with ourselves, which is a very difficult thing to do. And here's what Jesus is getting at. He understands something. Forgiven people forgive people. Forgiven people forgive people. That's the law of love that James talks about. There you go. That's the law of love. Forgiven people forgive people. Jesus is not saying, man, if you don't forgive other people, I hate you now, blah, 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 blah. Jesus is saying, listen, listen. If you have experienced my forgiveness and you have experienced my love, there is no way you would be viewing other people that way. If you truly understood, like at a heart level, man, how deeply I love you and how quickly I've run after you, you would never be viewing other people this way. So, if you are judging other people, the only explanation is either you don't understand my forgiveness or you've never experienced it. You've never experienced it. If you insist on judging other people, there is a 0% chance, 0% chance that Jesus' forgiveness is fully defining my life. When I was about 16 years old, my dad bought me my first car. It was an old navy blue Ford F-150. It was an awesome, awesome car. I think he was worried I was gonna turn out to be like a wimp or something. Because he told me, he's like, son, I noticed you've been wearing a lot of tie-dye lately. son, I saw you singing along to a musical the other day. So I bought you this truck to try and counteract whatever that is, you know? I'm just kidding. He never actually said that. Actually, fun fact about Big Jeff, he loves musicals. Not so cool anymore, is he? Anyways, But when I was 16, my dad bought me this Ford F-150, this huge truck, and I absolutely loved it. And we had this long, windy driveway that I had to back out every day. And so every morning when I got up for school, I wake up, you know, I'd get in the car about 6:30 in the morning. I would hop in my truck. I would turn on the music. There was no Bluetooth on the truck. There's only a CD player. And the only CD I really had was Joshua Tree by U2. You know, so I'd put that in, crank that. I put in that CD, and then I put it in reverse, Terry, hit the gas as fast as I could, and just like fly out of the driveway. Like absolutely as fast as I could, fly backwards down the windy driveway. Well, when I got home from school, my dad was like, son, like you can't drive like that out of the driveway. You gotta be careful, you gotta go slow, you gotta look where you're going. I'm from a family of eight. There's cars parked everywhere. He's like, you're gonna hit something. I'm like, whatever, dad, you don't understand me. You know. So the next morning, you know, same thing, fly out of the driveway. Next morning, same thing, fly out of the driveway. Nothing ever happened. Well then, a few months later, I got in the car, 6:30, turned on my music, put it in reverse, hit the gas, was flying, went for just a little bit, and then bam, bam, my dad's brand new car was parked behind me just a little bit down the driveway. And I absolutely obliterated the front of it. I don't want to turn this message into an advertisement for the American Ford Company, but I will say, the back of the truck was like dented. His car was demolished. Like the front of the car absolutely destroyed. And when I got out and when I saw what I'd done to my dad's car, my heart sank. Like, I don't know if you had a moment like this where you're like, it feels like your heart is like on the floor. And I thought, I'm dead. That is the last decision I have ever made in my entire life. Like my life, he's going to kill me. I cannot believe I did this. And I knew that I had to go back into the house. I had to wake my dad up who was sleeping. And I had to tell him that I had destroyed his brand new car when he told me a million times not to fly out of the driveway. Let me tell you, I was expecting my dad to rip me to shreds. You idiot. I have told you so many times. Josiah, I bought you this car and you used it to destroy my other car. How can you be so stupid? I was expecting condemnation. I was expecting rejection. I was expecting to be screamed at for sure. And I was expecting judgment. And so absolutely terrified. I mean, terrified. I wandered into my dad's bedroom. He is sound asleep and he's a heavy sleeper. And I woke him up with like the worst words you could wake your dad up. You're like, Dad, I'm so sorry. I hit your car. What? Dad, I'm so sorry. I hit your car. He looked at me and he goes, how bad? Pretty bad, Dad, pretty bad. We walked outside to the driveway to look at it, and my dad just goes, that's pretty bad, son. I was terrified. I mean, adrenaline shooting through me. Like I couldn't even, like, he was saying things and I couldn't hear what he was saying. You know, like I absolutely terrified. I'm going to get killed. I was ashamed. I was embarrassed. I knew what I did, and I will never forget what my dad did next. I will never forget. My dad took a deep breath. He turned to me. He put his hand on my shoulder, and he looked right into my eyes, and this is what he communicated. It's okay, son. It's okay. I don't love this car. I love you. It's okay. I'm gonna pay for everything. Let me tell you something. My dad did not ask me for a penny for that car, which is wild because he raised us. Like if you go to a neighbor's house and you break something, you know, you're gonna work a second job and fix the thing at the neighbor. Like that's how he raised us. My dad didn't ask me for a penny for his car. The cost of my mistakes was absorbed by my father. Now, let me ask you a question. Why did my dad respond so graciously and so forgivingly when I had ignored every standard that he had given me and destroyed the most expensive thing that he had at the time. Like, why did he respond that way? Well, let me tell you, at the time when I was 16, I had no idea why he responded that way. I actually had no idea. I was completely shocked by it. However, a few years later, my dad was telling someone else, other people, offhanded stories about his childhood and about when he was a teenager. And I heard a story and finally it clicked for me. He said, I learned, when my dad was 16 years old, his dad bought him a car. And my dad would put it in reverse and go flying out of the driveway. And every single day he would come home and my grandfather, his dad, would say, son, you have to be more careful. You can't go flying out of the driveway. And he said, whatever, dad. And one day he flew out of the driveway and he demolished his father's car. And so absolutely terrified, he woke his dad up. His dad walks out to the driveway. My father is absolutely terrified. And my grandfather, my dad's dad, looks into his eyes, puts his hand on his shoulders and says, it's okay. I don't love this car. I love you. Don't you get it? Forgiven people forgive people. Forgiven people forgive people. When my dad had experienced so much forgiveness from his father that when I absolutely demolished his car, breaking every standard that he had, his instinct right out of bed, his instinct was to extend to me the same forgiveness that he had experienced himself. Forgiveness is contagious. It's like a fever. Once you get forgiveness, you can't stop spreading it to other people. And here's what forgiven people do. Forgiven people are looking for every opportunity to share the same love they've experienced to other people. They are not looking for opportunities to separate or to condemn. Now listen to me. That's just a story about a car. That's just a story about a car. Can I tell you a much more important story? And a story that applies to everybody. Let's talk about Jesus for a second. What did Jesus do? Listen, when Jesus was on the cross, what was he doing? When Jesus was bleeding out, dying on the cross, what was he doing? He was absorbing the cost for every mistake that I have ever made and every judgment that I deserved. Literally every single day of my life, God has patiently told me, Josiah, here's the right way to live. This is the loving way to live. This is how you treat other people. This is how you have an incredible relationship with me. This is the right way to go. And every single day of my life, I have said to God somehow, you don't understand, whatever, Dad, you don't understand. And I've gone my own direction. When Jesus was on the cross, he is absorbing the cost for every sexual mistake I've ever made. Every time I've ever let my selfishness win. Every time I have hurt someone that God created and God was trying to protect. Every time I've hurt one of God's kids. Every time I've run from God, I've cursed God, I've rejected God, I've spat in God's face. Listen to me. I have taken the life that God has given me, put it in reverse, and used it to destroy my relationship with him. I deserve judgment. I deserve to be yelled at. I deserve to pay. But when I was 16, when I was a teenager, one day I realized all the ways that I had cost God. One day it dawned on me the damage that I've actually done. And so spiritually speaking, when I was a teenager, I wandered into my heavenly father's room and I woke him up. And I said, God, I've really messed a lot of things up, you know. And it's dawned on me that I'm the type of person that's going to continue to mess things up for the rest of my life. And I was expecting to be yelled at. I was expecting to be lectured. I was expecting judgment. But instead, my father looked into my eyes, not with anger, but with compassion. He put his hand on my shoulder and said, my child, you don't understand. What I love the most is not what you've destroyed. What I love the most is you. It's okay. I'm gonna pay for everything. And Jesus on the cross is my Father in heaven, my God, paying for everything. Listen to me. What God cares about the most is not what you deserve. What God cares about the most is you. And I feel like a lot of us, we don't believe that. What God cares about the most is not what you deserve. What God cares about the most is you. And if you don't believe that, and that feels too out there for you, and whatever, in Luke chapter 23, Jesus is being nailed to the cross, like literally nailed to the cross. The nails are going through his wrist, shooting through his nerve endings, and these Roman soldiers are nailing him to the cross. And he is being held up there because of what I did. And as Jesus is being nailed to the cross in the most painful, weak moment of his life, he doesn't look at the soldiers and curse them. And he doesn't look at me and curse me. And I feel like that's what really should have happened because I'm the reason he's up there. Instead, Jesus says the most wild thing. He says, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. Even as these people are killing me, I don't want them to experience what they deserve. I love them. Even these people, I love them. And if what's gonna rescue them is me staying up here, keep me up here. And if what's gonna rescue them is more punish me. And when God looks at you, he says, listen, I love you. I love you. No, even if you're doing the worst possible thing, I love you. And that's why James says what he says. In chapter 4, verse 12, he says, this is clearly his foundation. He says, listen, God alone who gave the law, God is the judge. God alone has the power to save or to destroy. But what did he choose? He chose to save. He chose to love people who would never love him back. He chose you. And then James hits us with this next line. So if that's true, what right do you have to judge your neighbor? Here's what he's saying. If the only person who had the right to condemn me didn't, what makes me think I have the right to do anything else to anyone else? If the only person who had the right to condemn me, God, chose not to, what makes me think I have the right to do anything else to anyone else? So here's where I want to end. We are not going to end this conversation with, all right, everybody, go be more loving to people. Go, you know, be nicer. That might be helpful, whatever, if you're into that kind of thing. That might be helpful. But here's what I need you to understand. Is everybody listening? Here's what I need you to understand. The problem is not that you are judging other people. The problem is you don't understand how much God loves you. What is malfunctioning is not your relationship with this person. What's malfunctioning is your relationship with God. You don't know how much God loves you. And so what I want to do, I just want to lead us through a prayer. There's three parts to this prayer. I'm going to walk through it, and then I'm just going to give space for you to pray this prayer to God if you're willing. Here's the first part of this prayer. God, will you show me how much you've forgiven me? God, will you show me how much you have forgiven me? Listen, some of us here today, some of us have been hurt so deeply. You've been lied about. You've been abused. You've been hurt so deeply, and you just need to know, the Bible's so clear. Anytime Jesus interacts with us when we're hurting, his instinct is to cry with us, to sit with us, to be patient and compassionate with us, and Jesus literally died to heal those wounds. That's his instinct. But here's what we can do sometimes. Can I tell you something that's a little bit hard to hear? Sometimes, when we focus so much on what other people have cost me, I fail to see how much I have cost God. Sometimes I can hide behind the ways other people have hurt me and then completely fail to see that I have hurt God. And here's why that's a problem. Until I see how much I have cost God, I will never know how much God loves me. I will never, the result that I want is not, oh my gosh, I'm such a terrible sinner. That's not the result. When I see how much I've cost God, what happens is, oh my gosh, Jesus, you love me more than I could ever ask for. So Jesus, will you show me how much you've forgiven me? Here's the second part of the prayer. Show me how much you've forgiven me. And now, God, will you put on my heart anyone in my life, anyone, in my life who I am not showing that same forgiveness to. God, give me names, give me faces, give me people. And listen, it doesn't have to be that deep. It doesn't have to be that deep. You don't need to have this big traumatic scenario. For some of us, like the person that I'm judging is the person that put up a political sign in their yard and now I've lumped them into a category. For some of us, it's a family member, it's a friend. For a lot of us, it's like, I read an article on this type of people and now I believe this about them, right? God, I don't know what it is for you, but I know you have them, and because I do too. God, put on my heart names of people in my life, maybe people I've never met, that I'm not showing that same forgiveness to. And then here's the last part of the prayer. God, show me how to love them the same way you love me. Give me an action step. Jesus, if you were walking on this planet right now and that person hurt you, how would you interact with them? And then give me the courage to act exactly the same. Exactly the same. Some of us, like literally, what God might put on your heart is before you even start singing this, don't start singing the song until you shoot a text. Hey, will you get coffee with me? Others of us, God's gonna put, it might not make sense to reach out to that person, but you just gotta process with God. I don't know what it is for you, but God, give me an action step. Let me end by saying this. If you are in this room and you do not have a relationship with Jesus, you do not have a relationship with Jesus, I just need you to know that same forgiveness I'm talking about is extended to you. I don't care what you've done. You might think you're the worst person to ever live. When God looks at you, he loves you with all of his heart. And you can begin that relationship with Jesus today. He's already reaching out to you. But when you take his arm, you're not gonna be met with anger. You're gonna be met with the biggest hug in the world. Your father wants his kid back. So the band's gonna come out. They're gonna give some space. You take this time, talk to God, process with God, maybe take a picture of this prayer and pray it through, okay? Once you got the prayer, you can close your eyes, bow your head, but you just process with God.